Hey everyone, I'm Yasmin Noori and you're listening to the Behind Her Empire podcast. I'm on a mission to showcase successful self-made women who share honest stories and lessons of what it really takes to create the life you want and build your own empire. If you've been listening to the show, you know, just like you, I've been on my own personal journey to build my empire. I started my business Bia to help women tackle their period problems and hormonal imbalances using a natural whole foods approach. If you're suffering from bad cramps, irregular periods, fatigue, bloating, stay tuned because a little bit later in the podcast, I'll share a bit more about my company Bia. But for now, let's jump into today's episode. I want to welcome this week's guest, Sally Christensen, to our show today. Sally is the CEO and founder of Argent, the brand revolutionizing women's workwear. Sally always believed she would become an entrepreneur, but didn't jump into it initially and knew she wanted to get more experience before diving into her own thing. She started her career in finance and banking and then decided to work in tech at Cisco. She always had frustrations around functional workwear for women and had the idea of starting the company, but she didn't pull the trigger until a few years later when she read a study that stated that women are judged based on their appearance, which we talk all about today. All stars aligned, and Sally finally decided to take the leap on the idea and start Argent. Since 2016, Sally and Argent have been at the forefront of the workwear revolution, offering functional, high-quality, unique pieces that equip women to push the envelope and take their seat at the table. Their mission is to arm the working woman with confidence through their clothing. In our episode together, we talk about how Sally pivoted from her corporate career to becoming a fashion entrepreneur with no design experience, the steps she took to fund the idea, and her thoughts around how to approach co-founders and hiring when you're building a team. She also shares the very unconventional approach she took to launch the brand, how networking has been crucial to her success and best practices there, and how she navigated the brand during the pandemic when offices were closed and the brand nearly went to zero, which is a crazy story in and of itself. We also chat about building your confidence, how to set boundaries at work and in life, and so much more. Welcome to the show, Sally.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Well, I have a million questions about your story. I'm a big fan of your brand. I spent a good amount of my life in New York in finance, and I'm like, man, where were you when I needed you the most? I had the toughest time finding the right clothes. So I love the mission and everything you're doing. It makes complete sense. So I'm excited to go into your journey today. So thank you again.
Sounds like that's our person.
I know. I was listening. I'm like, I am your market. I'm exactly what I was doing in finance. I was the perfect candidate, or even now. So I'm excited and can't wait. You know, before we go into your story, I'd actually love to kind of talk about your upbringing. I know entrepreneurship is something that runs in your family from both your dad and your grandfather. And you've actually called them your earliest teachers in your life. So I'd love to maybe hear more about them and maybe some of the biggest lessons that they've taught you.
I mean, I'm sure it was inspired by them. I also was just born to work and be an entrepreneur. It's like in me. It's on both sides of my family. So my dad is an entrepreneur and I grew up watching him sell rugs. He is a Turkish immigrant. I think he is probably my biggest inspiration. My grandfather, so his father, I never had the opportunity to meet, but also an entrepreneur in Turkey, ran his own shop, just a little corner shop. And then on my mom's side, my great-grandfather was an entrepreneur. He started Argent Lumber, which is actually what Argent was named after. And so much of that is a nod to him. And I admired him so much. I would read his letters growing up because it was old school. They typed, you know, all of their letters. And a lot of his work was captured in boxes just filled to the brim that I enjoyed reading as a child. But I followed my dad. I used to go to work with him starting at the age of 5. And I mean, as early as I could was selling lemonade. I had lemonade stands in front of his stores, selling horseshoe picture frames, selling piggy banks that I would color. I'd make them out of old glass apple juice jars. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. I sat at a computer with a stapler and all I wanted to do was work.
I love that. No, it definitely resonates. It's funny because now that we're working, my whole life, I was like, I want to work. I want to make money. I'm like, dang, looking back at my journey, I wish I kind of was a little bit more chill about the whole process, you know, but it's funny. The DNA seems a little similar, but I'm curious, you know, it's interesting because sometimes, you know, also from my end, I grew up in an immigrant family. My dad's entrepreneurial and you see the highs and the lows, right? And it's not glamorous. And I've kind of noticed there's two camps of children. They either shy away from entrepreneurship because they're like, dang, this is hard. I want more stability. And some are like, you know what? This is part of my blood. I'm used to it. And you kind of are in between a little bit. You know, you knew you were an entrepreneur, but you didn't necessarily take that leap very early on, similar to me. So I kind of want to hear about your life after undergrad. It wasn't as straightforward as you would think. You know, you moved to Chicago without a job, but tell me more about your headspace at the time and what were you envisioning for yourself then?
Yeah. So first I want to give credit to my mom because what she gave me was the ultimate gift. She said, never rely on anyone else. Make sure that you can make a living on your own. You don't want to be tied or reliant to someone, you know, financially. And so that just reinforced, I mean, who I was. I think that everyone learns differently and we all tick differently. And for me, I need a holistic understanding as sort of a baseline. And so knowing that, I chose a more traditional career path that was more corporate and a more traditional academic path. So I went to undergrad, I studied business administration, I moved to Chicago with no job in sight, which is probably more on the entrepreneurial side of who I am.
Totally.
And ended up getting a job in banking, worked in wealth management for a couple of years, went back on my MBA at the University of South Carolina with a focus on supply chain and operations, and then got hired at Cisco Systems in tech. From Cisco, that's where I quit to start Argent. But I intentionally chose every single step of my career journey with an eye towards learning and with an eye on eventually like starting my own company. I knew that that was an end goal of mine, but I think back on how little I knew about business in my 20s, and all of those experiences were really necessary for me based on how I comprehend the world to just really give me a good understanding of business and myself and people and just how to approach and build things, honestly. So I think I just tried to de-risk starting my own company.
There's so much that you said that was so powerful because, you know, obviously now you have a fashion brand, but there were so many experiences that weren't in that industry that you have mentioned helped define who you are and help you learn all aspects of business. And I love that because, you know, there's a lot of women listening in, and this was me back in the day where I'm like, dang, I'm not in the industry that lights me up fully, but all those experiences now looking back truly help you and allow you to be more rounded. So I love the curiosity of just learning despite where you are, right? Like wealth management. And then you went back to business school supply chain makes sense with what you're doing now. But, you know, those experiences working under someone else's dime is so powerful, right? Versus starting I could not start a business probably after undergrad. I wouldn't even know where I would be at that time. But
same. And some people can and should, yeah, which is the irony. So it's like there isn't blanket advice that works for everyone, because I have friends that started companies that are now massive companies and it was out of their college dorm room. And so just knowing myself, this was the right path for me. I love what you said too about doing it on someone else's dime. My last year at Cisco, I actually worked on Cloud, which was a new initiative for Cisco. They were late to the game. I was the seventh person on a team of 250 people. And the thing that made me take that leap was how much entrepreneurial experience I would get. So, you know, entrepreneurship within a larger organization, I got to build my own team, define a team. I had budget. I made mistakes. I learned about myself. I got to just grow a ton. And from there, that was my jumping off point for starting Argent.
I love that. And I feel like it gives you the confidence to make that leap. And I also, before I made the leap, I worked at a venture-backed tech startup, was like the fifth employee. And I was like, wow, this is a whole other world I didn't know existed. But you grind and you're like, okay, I think I could do it. So I love that experience. So anyone listening, you know, if you could work on those muscles, whether it's like an entrepreneurship role in a bigger company or work at a startup, I think that's so clever. So I want to go back, you know, to your time at Cisco. I know it was a pretty incredible time in your life, a lot of defining moments, but maybe are there one or two things that really stand out that you think have really shaped you as a person?
Oh boy. Yeah. Cisco was a great experience for me. So I joined into a leadership rotational program that they offered for MBA students. So they brought in about four people every year to participate in this program. And it was, I mean, given all that I've shared about how I operate, it was such good hands-on experience in the major functions of the supply chain organization at Cisco. And so I spent 6 months in each function, and it was just this accelerated learning, and just, you got a lot of experience, and it was great for me. I ended up being on a project that we were doing for a state-owned enterprise in China. It was a joint venture. Basically, we were white labeling Cisco's cash cow products. And that thread of consistency was really helpful for me as well, because I got to move from global planning and fulfillment to product operations, to global supplier management, to manufacturing ops, and see the different facets of bringing this to life. Through that, I mean, clearly there was like substantive knowledge that was gained just from being hands-on. I think learning how to communicate was one of the biggest takeaways from Cisco. My favorite saying of all time is, if I'd had more time, I would have written a shorter email, which I was communicating this project up to the highest levels of Cisco. And you have to figure out how to be so thoughtful in your communication, your words, and like which audience you're messaging to and what that message is. So I think I learned that. I also learned the power of networking at Cisco and how to leverage that for your career advancement, because there's a lot that happens in informal conversations and a lot to be gained from those and at all levels. So to have new career entrants or peers that are part of your network that you're connecting with outside of the work, mentors, and then senior level, I think that that's really something that I took away from Cisco. I mean, the list is long. I had a really good time there. So I'll say one more. The thing that I learned the most from the cloud experience was people and politics. Just understanding how to navigate politics and identifying when someone's bringing their own baggage to something and how to strip away the personal and emotional aspects of that, or identify like what's what and suss out what's what. So that was very helpful that I've now since brought into the Argent journey, because people is a huge part of being successful at work.
Oh my God, people is everything. I'm going to repeat what you said, because there's so much there to unpack. But like in any organization, whether it's a corporate company like Cisco or even in a small business like mine, there's only, you know, 8 people, which is interesting that the people dynamics begin to show up like a company. So it's just, I'm also learning as I'm going. And you mentioned, you know, people show up, but it's a skill set to know what to really think through with someone's statement, whether it's their own baggage or what they're going through. So I'd love to just hear, you know, how did you learn that? And how did you decipher that? Because that's something that a lot of people don't really pick up on. And I think it's really important.
Yeah. So one of the things that Cisco did invest in when I was working in the cloud group, because we were forming so quickly, were a lot of personality tests, a lot of brainstorming sessions, et cetera. So I think the more like textbook approach would be in these tests and bringing in formal coaches and really investing resources. That's eye-opening, because we all communicate differently. Like, I'm not a literal communicator. I actually leave a lot unsaid, and I have worked for literal communicators. What I took away was, if I ask this person a question point blank, they are going to give me an answer and it's going to be literal. Like, there was just so much value, and like I could go on and on about, you know, how these tests were super helpful. What they don't teach you is how to suss out baggage. And like, the higher you move in an organization, the more you see. The best executives that I've encountered and that I've had the opportunity to work with can read people in like 1 second and know what motivates them. They know what makes them tick. They know what maybe their like areas of opportunity are, et cetera. I think that's critical to grow an organization and to get to, you know, like a business goal is what you're aiming for. But also, I think it's important for protecting your like yourself as well, because I dealt with a lot of politics at Cisco. It's a bit of a political organization, and most are at that size. And I think that you have to recognize when things are someone else's issues that are manifesting a little bit differently. Like, it's just something that a muscle that I think it develops over time, and it's certainly developed further with Argent. And I guess the last piece that I'll say is, I have no tolerance for politics. So, you know, if I ever see anything like that at Argent, it's just not a good cultural fit for us. So we try and interview for that. If someone generally insecure and political go hand in hand. So if we detect anything, we would say that it's not a fit for what we're building.
Hey everyone, it's Yasmin here. In 2020, I was struggling with some debilitating health stuff. I just got off birth control and suddenly I had acne, mood swings, breast tenderness, and really painful periods. I tried so many things, but the one thing that worked was something called seed cycling. I know you're probably thinking, seed cycling? What the heck is that? It's a natural way to support your hormones using 4 specific seeds throughout your cycle. The challenge is that seed cycling can be a little complicated to do and kind of time consuming. So I decided to make an organic seed cycling product that is so easy to use. We make it effortless for anyone to get started today. It's called Bia, and it's a super easy way to add something powerful to your diet to support your hormones, regulate your cycle, and bring back balance. To learn more about Bia and join our community with thousands of incredible women all over the world, go to BiaWellness.com, and that's spelled BeeyaWellness.com. And check out the show notes for our promo code to get $10 off your first purchase. Thanks so much for listening, and now let's get back to today's episode. Yeah, there's so much just gold in what you're saying and similar. Like, I think I have PTSD from working in toxic environments and politicalness that when I see even like 5%, I'm like, absolutely not. I just am very sensitive. And I'm like, guys, I come from a very different background. And like, my dream is to never create a business with an ounce of politicalness or hierarchy. Or so I'm very sensitive to you as well. But one thing that I thought was so interesting that you mentioned in another interview with Cisco and your time there is you learned about boundaries. And that's something that I never learned working crazy hours. So tell me more about that. And if that has changed since now you're an entrepreneur running your own business.
This is so important. I think that we are so quick, especially as Americans, especially with technology and how accessible work has become, we're so quick to give our lives, you know, up for work. And it just, that should never be the equation. As much as I have said, I love work, but family always trumps work, right? Like that, the reason we're on this planet is for like human connection and experience, and family is everything. And so when I started at Cisco, I worked long hours. When I moved into cloud, I only worked. I was down to like a few hours of sleep a night for a period of time. And I think I got to a point where I recognized that after about 6 months, people's opinions of you and your performance are pretty much formed and they've taken shape. And so what I did was step back and identify what was sustainable for me in terms of hours and how to reset expectations, because I think I had done myself a disservice by responding to every email, every text around the clock. So I stepped back and said, I'm going to work from 8 to 6. I didn't communicate it with anyone. I just started conditioning everyone to know that those were my hours. Exact same results, except my sanity was intact. Everyone still thought I was, you know, I was the same in their minds, except that they changed their behavior to get what they needed from me. And I was able to have like more work-life balance. In terms of how that's carried over to Argent, I mean, starting your own company, it's intense. So I've probably slipped a bit. It's not as balanced as I would like, but it's so integrated that it does feel a lot healthier. Like there are just things that I don't even realize that are such a privilege, like for me to pick up my kids or drop off my kids or do, you know, these things that you'd have to have a little bit more permission on, I think, in a corporate environment. We have a lot of flexibility, but I am working or thinking about work at all hours. So I try and do the things that allow me to stay sane, like exercise every day, but it's an imperfect effort.
Yeah, it's so interesting because like also, you know, being in an environment where you're working a ton in a corporate company, you think you're like, okay, I could do it. Like I've done that. Good for you to put boundaries. I never put boundaries until maybe like my 30s and I regret a lot of it, but good for you. Like that shows a confidence you had in yourself and the entrepreneurial nature in you to go against the grain. So I love seeing how you did that. But it's interesting, yeah, when you're working in an environment where you're in a corporate environment, or really even when I was in a startup, it's very different than when it's your own business. In a positive way, it seems a little bit healthier because like you said, you have the flexibility. So if you're feeling off, you can take a break, go for a walk at 10 a.m. Like you have that. But the weight and the mental load is something that I never really experienced because you're right. You're always thinking about it. So it's interesting. There's like positives of the work ethic can help you, but no one can teach you like the mental load, which is so key and managing that until you start your business. So it's interesting because I'm always asking people in this podcast, like, what do you do to kind of take the gas off of it, right? Because we're all so passionate about what we're doing. It's like integrated in our life. It's cool to see like exercising for you. Is that a non-negotiable every day that you have?
Nope. I wish it was. For my husband, yeah. He does such a good job with it. No, I am like not modeling best behavior, I would say, on taking care of myself. But, you know, I know what I do need to do. And sometimes I do. It's like there are periods of time where I've just, you know, we've all gone through this where it's like, I will never eat differently. I will never not work out, all of these things. I know what it takes for me. It feels like there's just never enough time, especially with work and kids. And so I think that the mindfulness and stepping back every now and again and reassessing is pretty important.
And I love that you said, this is something I don't work out every day. My husband's way better. He's like, let's work out together. Like he's trying to get me back. I'll go through phases. Like something in my life will happen. The business will get busy. A personal issue happens. I'm dealing with family and I'm just not working out as much. And then I'll be really good. But there's some non-negotiables, like sleep is very sacred to me. That's how I keep my mental health, right? To like show up. So that's a self-care act. I try my best to eat on time because I'm notorious for skipping meals and then doing a podcast and then meeting. And then I'm like, why do I feel like shit? So food is big. But I love what you said about when you know you're kind of hitting your brink, you kind of pause. And I actually think that's powerful because that's what kind of helps the sustainability in business is like, you're not pushing yourself over the mark. You know when you're bubbling up. And for you at this stage, you're like, all right, I know what I need to do, like go back to the basics or spend more time with your family. So that's a huge learning because some people don't even have that awareness. And that's something that I'm just, you know, I probably learned the past 2 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've been doing this for 9 years now. And so there's certainly balance that I found in my routine. And people are always, I mean, you said this earlier, it's like, we're really glamorizing what it is to be a founder a lot of times. And it's like, it's not a glamorous existence, you know? But I think that people feel like I'm working 24/7. And for me and like my appetite for work, I actually feel like I step out a lot and step back a lot. It just doesn't look the same as it used to at a Cisco. And it's what you said, like there are days where everything's going sideways and I'll just assert control over some other aspect of my life, whether it's working out, going for a walk, cleaning the apartment, or watching a Netflix show. Like I just give myself permission and then I'll be right back at it the next day.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm laughing because I love what you said in terms of like, if things are going sideways, which listen, it's like, there's always things going sideways. Some days are more difficult than others, but I will assert control and start organizing the house. And that's my husband's alarm of like, all right, Yasmin, what's going on? Maybe you should just relax and watch TV. I just start going into control mode. So it's just funny because we can't control our businesses. We can't control our life, but like anything else, I'm like, please just let me control cleaning this kitchen or something. It brings
that's
a lot
mine.
Of joy.
Like, you and I are the same. Not everyone is like that. You and I are the same.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. I love it. Well, let's talk about, you know, how the idea of Argent came about. I find it so interesting because it seems like the idea was kind of percolating, I believe, in grad school. So tell me more about the evolution and when you decided to like actually make the leap.
I have had this idea for forever. I mean, my mom will say that it predates grad school because we all remember the experience of shopping for our first professional outfit and just how sad the options have always been. This truly is born from a personal pain point. Like every single time I've had to shop for workwear, professional clothing, it's just been a really bleak experience. And it's so obvious that women and work have not gone hand in hand in the, you know, in the minds of those creating the attire. And so I've just been on the receiving end of a really, you know, sad situation for, it was almost a decade, and it was across different experiences and it was across different cities and industries and with different peer groups. And everyone complained about this aspect of work. Finding clothing that you actually wanted to wear was next to impossible. And I thought for sure this would not be the company that I chose to start. Like this was absolutely not what I wanted to do. And then I read a study when I was working at Cisco that showed that women are judged based on appearance. They quantified the impact of what you wear on your bottom line of your lifetime. And I was at the forefront of the casualization of the workforce. And I was seeing how dress was really holding women back in tech specifically, because it just required too much time and knowledge and awareness. And like in an area that these women just didn't really care to exert a lot of effort in, but no one was modeling what the standard of dress really was for women. There weren't a lot of female leaders. And when there were, they were overdressing. And, you know, it just felt like a pitfall for a lot of women. So being a true millennial, I saw an opportunity to solve the problem myself because no one was. And it was just top of mind for me for so long, and innovate the product in every way, introduce style and quality and functional details and versatility is a big one. Like, how do I get a blazer that goes with jeans that I can fully suit, that I can wear a million different ways, I actually like to wear? And then on the mission side, there was such a white space around modeling professional women. Like, we weren't celebrating the women that I was seeing day in, day out in my professional experience. We just weren't seeing that in any brand. And I think brands are such a powerful platform. And so I sort of reflected back on my own childhood as I thought about what career options were open to me. And I couldn't really dream up that many because I only saw doctors and bankers and lawyers in the Southeast where I grew up, you know, and then I saw my dad who started his own business. So I was like, well, I'll have to start my own business, like TBD on that. And so in Argent, we have pulled women that have these incredible careers into our visuals, into our storytelling in a way that celebrates them, but also inspires the next generation of creators, because representation matters so much. So that was really probably my ultimate driver, is how do we create a brand that serves as a resource to women who are incredibly disadvantaged in the workplace.
Oh my God, I have goosebumps just hearing about your mission, because I so believe that. And similar to you, you know, I thought, okay, to be successful, you got to be a banker. I never became a doctor, or you get into tech. And I'm like, in all these industries and different cities I've lived in, I'm like, where are the women? So it was really tough for me to dream. And similar to you, I always knew I wanted to start a business. The way my dad started it is very different. I didn't really like see commonalities. I always felt there must be a different way. And I started hosting these dinners when I was still in tech of different women entrepreneurs with one of my dear friends at the time, Shiza, who's amazing, the founder of Our Place. And seeing the different women we would get together was huge in me taking the leap. I started this podcast because I'm very passionate about representation. Like, entrepreneurship and just success can look so many different ways. And there's so many amazing jobs. Like, you don't even have to start your business. Just knowing what's out there, it was so helpful in my journey. So I love that you guys profile, like, just you do such a great job profiling, like, working women, entrepreneurs, politicians, artists. Like, that representation is so key because not all of us have access to that. So I love the mission. So, okay, you had this idea for a while, you read this research report, you're ready to take the leap. Tell me more about maybe like the early steps to leaving that corporate job and those early days of getting the product out, because you didn't really have any background in fashion.
It is so hard. It's like just such a quick shift from fully scheduled, having like infrastructure of Cisco, more team members than you need, more resources than you need, to like you're on your own and it's a just blank piece of paper, like a white canvas. So I think for me, I was completely naive, but I had such conviction in the vision of Argent. And I always tell founders, like, you have to believe in the end goal in order to make it there, because it takes such thick skin. It really isn't for the faint of heart. Early days, I, as a forcing function, just scheduled meetings with individuals that I thought could be helpful. And I just started learning and meeting and talking, but it also forced me to stay on schedule and not just do what I wanted, or like relax or fall into a bad habits. And so for 6 months, I was just talking to people and I was connecting with people that would then connect me to more people, really networking and informally working on a business plan and trying to prioritize and identify like what was critical, what were my blind spots, and how do I go about starting Argent. Pretty early on, it became obvious that I would want a creative team. It felt as if a lot of people have gone after this category because it is such a massive white space. It's a known white space in apparel. And I think that because of that, and because it's a women's issue, a lot of people have tried to go after this particular category. What no one had done, though, was really lean into the fashion side and find like a creative team and hire a creative team and honor that skill set, because that's a completely different skill set from what my background is. If I'm designing, like, we're not making it anywhere. And so early days, I brought on a woman who was our creative director, who really defined a lot of the visual, like the product, you know, product, what became defining pillars of our product that are to this day relevant. And we've always had, I've always had a creative counterpart at Argent. And I think that's honestly one of our unfair competitive advantages, is that we've really allowed people to come in and bring their skill set and provide something that I'm not able to do.
I love that. And there's two things that stand out. I love that you've been in this game for 9 years, but you still remember leaving, like, those early days, because some people it's very fuzzy for them. But you're so right. Leaving corporate, you have all this stability, or not even corporate, any job where you have a team and it's not, you're under someone else's umbrella. You leave and you're on your own. It's a very big adjustment. Like, you don't have that support system. You don't have those peers to talk to. It's literally you. But what I think is so amazing with what you did is scheduling and networking, because I think having that in the calendar kind of helps you stay on track and build that momentum. And it's funny looking back, because I forgot about all this. I was doing the same, because I was still I didn't even have a business idea, actually. I was still crafting it at the time. And it led to this podcast. But that stability of scheduling and making sure you're getting in front of the right person, or you're following up with them, like, having that when you just leave a business is really key, and structure. And so I love that you did that. And I think that's huge. And also, you know, one question I get a lot from women who listen in are like, you know, I don't know if I should start this business, because they were wanting to do something in fashion. They're like, I'm not a creative director. I don't have a co-founder. A lot of people are looking for co-founders to start something. But I love that you didn't necessarily go that route. You're like, I'm going to hire a creative director. And look, it ended up being great. So I think, you know, that is a different option. You can either have a co-founder who has a different skill set, or you can hire a team. So it's cool to see all the success that you've created by still being the solo co-founder, but making sure you're supported in all the right ways. So you have this idea, you're networking with a bunch of people. Tell me more about the fundraising process, because I would imagine that hiring a creative director that early on and creating the product is not cheap and something that you can maybe bootstrap at your young age at the time.
Yeah. In fairness to her, she was technically my co-founder. She was
Okay.
4 years. Yeah. Whole other topic.
Any learnings from that experience?
Yeah. Lots of them. probably the biggest learning for me over the course of my journey has been to trust myself and my gut. I think we give up control oftentimes when we're not the experts of something, and people will be quick to tell us that we're not the experts. So with a lot of female founders specifically, they're having success with whatever it is that they are launching, and then they'll be out fundraising and people just tell them things like, well, you don't have business. You don't know, like, business. Like, you didn't, technically you are not, you haven't studied the right things. You don't have the right experience on paper. And so you need to immediately bring on, like, a CEO. And I think that we get that negative reinforcement over and over in some of these conversations. And so for me, it was, well, you're not a designer, or you don't know because this is not something that you have experience with, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we internalize that a little bit too much. And it takes an overwhelming amount of confidence to do this. But about 5 years in, I would say that I got to a point where I recognized that my gut actually was always right. I mean, it was not always right, but, like, generally, yes. Like, we're building something that is an extension of myself. And I'm building something because I have a strong consumer point of view on it. And I should always be part of the conversation, even creatively. And I am creative just in a different way. I'm creative in a business sense. I'm a creative in, like, a problem solving sense. So I just think for founders, the piece of advice to take from that is to not give away your power, because I think everyone's looking to take it away, especially from women. I mean, these will be businesses that on paper are just crushing, and they're still getting beaten up in these conversations about how they need to surround themselves with, like, people who know what they're doing. So back to your original question, I don't remember it.
Yeah, no, going back to the original question. And actually, before I bring that up, it was around fundraising. I want to mention something when you're talking about hiring, listening to your gut. And, you know, I'm 3 years now into my business, and I will say I definitely did not trust my gut early on. And you said something in another interview that really resonated with me, where you were like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you were saying, you know, when I was hiring, one of the things that I learned was to slow down the process a little bit. Like, I think we get really excited and passionate, and I definitely get like that. Like, I will call my sister-in-law as my co-founder, and I'm always calling her being like, I met someone amazing and I think she'd be great. Like, I love it. And it's, you know, it's pros and cons of being that person. But tell me more about what you kind of learned when it comes to hiring, you know, whether it's a co-founder or an employee, and the importance of maybe slowing down the process, or whatever you think.
That's exactly right. Also, the more we talk, the more I realize that we're very similar. I do that. I project my enthusiasm and my passion onto people that I'm interviewing. I got the advice before I even started to like hire slow, fire fast. That's ultimately what makes the best founders. And that's who I have become, but it took a long time and it took a lot of like wrong decisions. What I learned early on is that, I mean, you're so vulnerable and it's very lonely. And so I think you're looking to surround yourself by support, and you're trying to realize this vision. And I think sometimes that can get, that can be like misdirected and manifest in different ways. And so where we are now is that we have a very robust hiring process with multiple people participating from the team. I'm more of a culture check. I've also gotten better at interviewing for sure. And we've gotten to a point where I need people to convince me that they like have to work here, because that's almost the level of commitment that it takes for someone to be the right fit in this environment. We're hiring for work ethic and we're hiring for values alignment. We're not necessarily hiring for like textbook resume, you have the right experience. In a startup environment, the most successful founders are able to make really tough decisions very quickly. So I do fire fast. I think that if I had to critique myself, I probably struggle with clarity. And I think clarity is kindness, you know, when it comes to people. But I'll also say that when you're building something and you know someone isn't working, there's nothing to be gained from keeping them around for anyone. And it's always the best outcome, you know, for both parties, if you're ending something quickly, because it also wasn't right for them. So our goal with hiring is always to find the right people and for them to be successful in the role. My job is for, you know, the long-term success of Argent and to ensure that the right people are in place. And if they're not, that to course correct. But we're trying to be as preventative as we can and to hire as slowly as we can to ensure that we're getting the right people in the right roles.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And I think what you mentioned in the early days of the business, it's so true. You feel lonely. You're insecure about your idea. You don't know if it's going to work. And so you gravitate and you give people more chances because you're like, oh, like how lucky am I that they want to join this crazy idea?
That's right.
You have more flexibility. And you know, it's funny for me, I always see potential in people, probably sometimes more than they even see themselves. So I'm like, No, I know you could do it. So I'm also kind of learning my own style because I get very excited about someone and I see the potential, but not everyone needs to kind of hit what my expectations are of the person, right? Like I really think anyone in this life can do anything they want, but maybe it's not the right time in their life, or maybe they're not as aligned as what I would think. So I've kind of had to chill a little bit. And I love what you said, making sure that they have the conviction, because sometimes I can kind of overpower and show my conviction about them and convince them. But I love, you know, being a little bit quieter. And one thing that you said that I've learned a lot, I've had quite a share of my own leadership lessons this year, is what you said about being clear is kind and the importance of clarity. Like I've gone through a few hiring discussions and I've realized like, wow, like as a leader, I need to be more clear. And I think if I just listened to my gut and spoke up earlier and was clear about it, a lot of the issues that I had to deal with would not have come up. So I just want to emphasize that, because it's something that I'm working on. And, you know, I have a few other CEO founders who always remind me like, Yasmin, kindness is clear. You know, you got to show the clarity. So I love that. That's something that you also brought up. So hopefully it's helpful for anyone who's listening. So going back to fundraising, it seems like you've done a good job putting yourself out there, networking. You know, how was your whole fundraising process in the early days of Argent?
So I'll just start by saying fundraising is so broken. I mean, this is something that I hope to spend my entire career around in the future. Like it just is crazy. And how little people really, the statistics of it are so shocking. The fact crazy. That women receive less than 2% of venture funding, that means that women don't receive funding. And that like women of color get 0.3% of funding. that means they really don't receive funding. And that is everything in our world. And so given that those are the statistics, I think from day one, it was pretty clear to me that all rules were out the window. So, you know, there are these, people are always quick to tell you, like, you don't want a ton of investors. You don't want a long cap table. You don't want, you want to just get the best whoever. Oh, you have to have a term sheet. You have to have this. I've just never followed any of that advice. So early days, Argent, I realized that there is a high barrier to entry with what we're starting. It is resource, like cash intensive to actually make a product and sell the product, to hire a creative director, co-founder, and have her employed before we're even selling a product. Like these, all these things take money. And so to just get going, I opened up a convertible note and raised a little less. It was like 1.375 million. It took me over a year to do that. And it was just a rolling close. So money in, and we'd spend it as we got it. And that's how we got Argent off the ground. I focused on values aligned individuals who added value to what we were building. And that's a common thread for me. That's always been consistent with how I fundraise, is finding individuals who are bought into what we're trying to build into me, and that I can call on as resources and they have skin in the game. And so it ended up just being a lot of high net worth individuals writing, you know, checks sized 5,000, probably up to, I don't know, in that early round, maybe 200,000. From one investor, and a lot of conversations and a lot of no's, and being overly prepared as female founders have to be, having a financial plan, having everything, honestly, even just to get a shot at doing this. And then over the years, I've probably gotten much better at fundraising. If you want to talk about reading people, this is really where that comes into play. I know who's going to be a waste of my time and who isn't. I've gotten much better at accelerating conversations and sussing out who is going to write a check and be involved in who isn't. Yeah, I mean, I could go on all day about fundraising.
I know. It blows my mind that only 2% of women get fundraising. Also, like the stats for, what is it, like 4% of women break the $1 million mark revenue-wise? Like all the, I'm like, how does this, how is this possible? Yeah. Oh, yes. It blows my mind. Like, this is my small way of hopefully making an impact, but similar to you, like my future mission is we need to get more women running businesses. Obviously, funding is a huge part of that. It's amazing. And one thing that I actually would love to get your thoughts on, because I have a lot of people who reach out to me as they're in the early days of fundraising, you know, looking to get advice. And I think you do a really good job with relationship management, networking, right? Just seeing how that was a pillar for you early on, and then you fundraise. And I'm sure it was it's never easy, but I'm sure there was some correlation that helped you. What advice do you have for people listening who want to build networks and authentic relationships with people? Because I think that's a skill set that unfortunately many people don't have, and where I'm like, if you can build that, so much of life will unfold for you.
Networking is, I think, the most important skill set you can possess in business. I think that it's the most important thing to bring to any business, any role, anytime. It's even more important in a consumer-facing business for all aspects of the business, from customer to investment. I think networking is critically important, and this is something that I learned at Cisco, because I think people are everything, right? It's our team, it's our investors, it's our customers, it's media, it's celebrity, it's influencer, it's politicians. What I always remind people of is that, in my experience, great leaders want to dedicate a portion of their time to developing the future generation. And it's usually a third, a third, a third. So like a third of your time you want to carve out for networking. And like that's been my experience, because it's not one-sided ever. When you connect with someone and you authentically like bond and form a relationship, there's something in it for both parties. And so it's about just being intentional with who you approach, how you approach them, and what you're asking of them, and not being transactional. I mean, I just really genuinely like people. So it's probably easier for me. And I study people before I ever approach them. And there's some people that I never would approach because we don't share values, or, you know, I just don't think it would be productive. And so I'm just trying to be mindful of what that person wants, what I might need, and like how that marriage might happen. And then sometimes you get it to, you're meeting someone and you recognize that there's, you know, something amiss, and it doesn't go beyond that, but why not shoot your shot if you're trying to connect with someone? I think there's only upside from that. And that's, I mean, my whole career is built off of networking. Arjun has been successful based off my ability to network, I think, largely.
Yeah, I love that. It's funny. I feel like we're so similar. My life too. And the career moves I did, like everyone was like, how is a banker going to work at tech? It was all through networking. I never applied for a role. It was all through who I met, putting myself out there. And it's good for me to hear this because my husband always says, he's like, you need to get out there more. Like you're working so much, which is important, but your skill set is networking. I was like, no, everybody can do that. He's like, no, it's very special. So to hear you say that, it's just, it's nice. And it's a good reminder. And I love what you said in terms of how to network. Similar to you, I genuinely like people, but I love that you said being intentional, doing the work, like prepping in advance, adding value. These sound so simple, but a lot of people miss that. So I just want to underscore it because it's not tough to really build a genuine connection, but I love the intentionality behind the way you approach it and how it's been so helpful in your journey. So I know we've been talking about all things business. We haven't even got to the launch story of Argent, but I'll pause right there. Were you going to say something before I get into that? Or
just to round it out on networking, I also think that our society was built predominantly by white men. And that's how a lot of networking occurs on the golf course, at a bar, and in places where I don't think women are even like, I think there's judgment sometimes, you know, with me going on a walk with maybe a white male VC at 9 p.m. You know, there are just certain situations that women have been excluded from pretty consistently. And so what we're forgetting is that there are these networks that are just part of our societal construct, business schools and fraternities and like all of these things. My goal in life is to like give women equal access to those conversations. And I am very comfortable like having conversations across, you know, men and women and networking. And I think that it's magical figuring out how to make all these connections, but I think women are a bit disadvantaged there. So I think it's worth calling that out and that it takes some boldness and confidence to pick your head up from the work and to network, because it's ultimately you being vulnerable, right? To rejection or to whatever, a host of things that could happen. But my worldview is the no's and the rejection are just part of the journey, and it has nothing to do with you and everything to do with a whole long list of other things. And you just got to keep going for it because there's way more upside.
I love that you said that, because knowing that rejections and getting no's is kind of part of it makes it a little bit easier, because I think a lot of people can take it personally. And just hearing that from you, I think is important. And listen, people are busy, or, you know, unfortunately, like you said, it's tough to kind of break in those networking organizations. And it's true, being in banking and seeing it in tech too, I was like, wow, it's all the same circles of people, like entrepreneurship clubs that are mostly predominantly men, which I never had an interest in, because I'm like, where are the women? I don't want to, you know, I have great men as colleagues, but I would love ideally an organization that has a mix of more women, or like you said, the golf course, or even seeing, you know, my husband's an entrepreneur, and kind of the way he converses with others, it's, I feel like men do a good job, and because the system maybe has built, you know, it's supported for them. And I think it's important for us to, it's tough. And I'm trying to do this, hopefully, like you, to bring more women, is like create those spaces where people feel like, oh, I can learn from them, or really feel like they have a community. Because so much of entrepreneurship, what I realized quickly, is people who have your back, who are there to support you and talk about the nitty gritty. And I've built that for myself. It, you know, it took 3 years, and I continue to think about that, but it's so critical. So I don't have the answer, but you're right. It's not set up for women. And those are how deals are made. And I'm like, what? Like, my husband will get ideas for investments. I'm like, why'd they go to you and not me? Like, we're the same household. Like, what?
Yes.
That's a whole other conversation, but
yeah, it will. And because of it though, I think it makes me that much more driven to succeed as a female founder, to network as a woman, to call attention to the inequity that I see when I see it. I mean, I call people out. It's just who I am, but only in an effort to change, like to have positive, you know, impact, because I think people are generally well-intentioned. And so I think if you call their privilege out, sometimes it opens their eyes to something they wouldn't have experienced ever. So anyway, that's all, that's the only reason I brought it up.
No, it's so true. I love it. I feel like we'll have to do a part two to talk about all these things. But let's go into your launch story. And I want to talk about it because it's very unconventional. And I like that. And I think it's important to talk about. So tell me more about those. Yeah, the launch event that you guys had.
Yeah, so my background, right, corporate, and I used to get pulled out to do these like 1 day events that would be these women's conferences. And I'd always sign up for them. I think I learned a lot from them for what, in terms of what I brought to Argent. But what I noticed was that these high powered women were carving out like full days on their calendars, and that they're not like fully programmed days per se, or they're taking breaks during the day. And they would have like a setup that would be more sponsor booths than anything. So it'd be like Bank of America, Pfizer, Deloitte, whoever. And I was like, well, this seems like a cool opportunity to pop up and like sell something to me. So our first day of business, it was so fun. Our first day of business was we popped up at women's event in San Jose, California, roughly 6,000 women that are all like our target demographic, and set up like a full experiential Argent store. And it was bananas. It was so much fun. Wow. And nobody was doing it at the time. Now conferences have commerce sections. Like they do this more formally now, but this was first of its kind. It was exhilarating, as you can imagine.
Oh my gosh, that is amazing. And I know like you guys did quite well, you know, day one of the launch. Yeah. And I believe you didn't have all the clothes manufactured at the time. Like you got in the orders, but then you were hustling behind the scenes to make it like bring it to life.
We just received the product. Most of it, we may have had one or two pieces we didn't have. We brought two U-Hauls full of product, way too much product. We had like multiple sizes in every size. My husband came and was running from the parking lot to the convention center. It was probably like a half mile each way. And women were trying on. We were overrun the whole time. We had maybe 6-7 people there, friends and staff. But we couldn't keep up. It was so exciting. But the experience of like hearing women's feedback firsthand and having them try on and seeing what was working and what wasn't, it was really product market fit is what it was.
Yeah. And seeing that in real time, I mean, that's incredible. And it shows the intentionality that you had creating this product, because for it to really hit that early is amazing. So I love that. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit. You had, you know, so much success on launch day. COVID hits, right? The world is completely shifted. People are not going into work. What was going on in your mind? And I'm sure that was maybe one of the more challenging times in the business, but tell me more how you navigated that and kind of pulled through at the end of the day.
Yeah. So that was, I was 8.5 months pregnant, getting ready to go on maternity leave. And for the first time was like set up for a proper leave. This would be my second child. And I didn't take a leave with the first. And you're like, it's not like a proper corporate leave. You're still plugged in, but I was going to have like a more of an unplugged experience. I thought we were scaling in 2020, as most businesses, we were on fire. We were getting ready to raise money and just like really go to the next level, launching our first wholesale partner. I mean, the list is so long in terms of how much momentum we had. And overnight we went to $0 days. In no scenario could I have imagined that work was just going to stop as we knew it. So you're always sort of mentally mapping like your risk mitigation plan, right? So like I'm making these decisions and I'm taking risks, et cetera, all the time, every day. But in a startup world, for micro failure, looking for an opportunity to learn and make small mistakes and grow from them. And your only calculation is to ensure that it's not fatal. And so the decision that I had to make was, do we survive or do we shudder? And I made the decision to survive. And that's just who I am. But we had to go lean. We had 4 stores that we had to negotiate out of pretty quickly. I was lucky in that we decided to do this in March of 2020 before anyone really saw what was about to happen. I think this was at a time where retailers were saying, we'll reopen in 2 weeks. And I got out of every lease. And I only was able to do that because we were pretty aggressive in terms of our response. And then really just hunkered down, didn't pivot from a product perspective because that felt inauthentic to our mission. So didn't do loungewear, didn't do masks. And instead, we put all of our effort into running a campaign with a nonprofit partner centered around the election and getting women to vote that ended up going viral. And in one day, we made our year. So October 7th, 2020, one day.
Oh my God. Wait, sorry. So this, how did you make the year's worth in that one day?
We launched this hot pink suit for our campaign with Supermajority. It was lightning in a bottle. We sold through every single suit we had at the height of the pandemic because it just broke through in a way that you can only dream to. Because of that, I mean, the rest is history. And then we focused on rebuilding coming out of COVID. And now it's just gangbusters again. It's incredible.
Oh my God. You know, I've always envisioned a blog. I think Rebecca Minkoff has a blog that says like, you can't make this shit up. Every time I hear stories, like I want a book that's like, you can't make this shit up. Actually, I think I'm going to do that one day. And that is a story that I want to highlight. You're 8.5 months pregnant. You go to zero. I can't even imagine. I really can't imagine. Like I feel it in my body a little bit, but that's a whole other level. Wow. And then you make everything in one year and that's just... That's incredible. You can't make that shit up.
It's so funny because my husband always talks about this. He's like, you have so many stories. I don't remember really any of them, to be honest. Yeah. Like there was such, I mean, there's so much trauma probably baked into COVID years. But all I see now, which is what I saw then too, I knew on the other side of COVID, there would be delayed consumerism. And that we would all obviously be going back to work in some capacity. In a lot of ways, COVID accelerated demand to what we were doing since day one. Comfort, versatility, style, quality. You know, we just want to feel great, but we want it to be easy. So, and the competitive landscape was wiped out. So if I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't change a thing because now we had the luxury of time, which is such a gift in a startup environment because we were able to step back and come out of COVID with our brand, our product, our team, timing, our retail presence, everything came together like simultaneously. And that doesn't happen ever. And so now it's all about awareness and acquisition because all of the like pillars of the company are in place, you know?
Oh my gosh. Incredible. Sally, I already loved you before you came on the podcast, but I love you even more. Just so impressed by everything you build. I love the brand. I'm excited our listeners are going to know more about your story. We'll put all the info in the show notes, but this was so much fun. Thank you so much for being here and sharing your story.
Thank you for having me. I had a blast and the feeling is mutual. So thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Behind Her Empire. If you enjoyed this conversation, it would mean the world to me if you would consider leaving a review or even sharing this episode with someone who might be inspired to create their own empire. To stay updated on new episodes or join our private community, visit behindherempire.com to sign up. We send inspiring and short emails every week to your inbox. I'll see you next week, and until then, remember, you're always in charge of your own destiny, and it's never too late to start your own empire.